Next is Glansman versus Craig, if counsel could please step forward. May we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Ms. Margiela.
May I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
We'll have you back for rebuttal, hopefully for less than that. Please go ahead.
May it please the court. My name is Sharon Margiela. I'm a shareholder in the firm of Ogletree Deacons, Nash, Smoak, and Stewart. My colleague Jocelyn Merced and I represent the defendant, JC USA, Inc. The issue presented to the court today is whether the arbitration agreement between the parties should be invalidated because the parties failed to identify the arbitration forum or any process for conducting the arbitration. JC USA Inc. respectfully submits that the arbitration agreement should be enforced and that the decision of the appellate division should be reversed. In looking at this issue, the first thing to consider is that federal policy and state policy favor arbitration. Federal policy, as noted in the Federal Arbitration Act, notes that arbitration is the preferred method for resolving disputes. It's efficient and it's effective to resolve rights. The U.S. Supreme Court has noted that the FAA was implemented in order to place arbitration on the same footing. It applies to issues relating to arbitrability in state and federal court. Questions regarding arbitration must be addressed with the concept that arbitration is favored under federal policy. The U.S. Supreme Court in the Moses case noted that all doubts about whether a particular dispute is subject to arbitration must be resolved in favor of arbitration. And then in Volt, the U.S. Supreme Court said any ambiguity that exists in an arbitration issue must be determined in favor of arbitration. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court in federal law is not the only source for the advocates for arbitration. New Jersey also has a strong public policy, which this court has recognized, that favors arbitration to resolve disputes. This court in Garfinkel versus Morristown Obstetrics said that because of the favor status that is afforded to arbitration, an agreement to arbitrate must be read liberally in favor of arbitration. Both the U.S. Supreme Court in its recent decision in Kindred Nursing and the New Jersey Supreme Court in Leodori recognize that states cannot subject an arbitration agreement to more burdensome requirements than those governing the formation of any other contract. The New Jersey Supreme Court has also held that there's no public policy against having discrimination claims such as the one that is presented by Ms. Glansman.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt your opening statement, but
sure.
Can I suggest that you focus us on what you believe is mistaken about the appellate division rule?
Absolutely, absolutely. First, I think that the appellate division extended Adelise beyond that decision and took the concept of an individual must understand the ramifications of agreeing to arbitration to a point that I don't think that this court ever envisioned. And I think actually, if you look at this court's decision that came out after the Flansman appellate division decision, the decision in Kernahan, while the court did not uphold the arbitration decision agreement there for legitimate reasons, this court mentioned what we are arguing in our position to the court on behalf of JC USA, and that is that the State Arbitration Act, the New Jersey Arbitration Act, provides a mechanism in the absence of parties submitting an arbitration agreement that provides for a method to select the arbitrator or the rules The State Arbitration Act covers that. So I would ask the court to look at what this agreement actually says, because that's what you're doing here, is you're determining whether or not, as a matter of contract, this arbitration agreement is enforceable. And if you look at the arbitration agreement, it meets all of the concerns that this court addressed in the Attlees decision. It talks about the fact that the individual is agreeing to waive any right to a civil or jury trial. The arbitration agreement, by the way, was signed by Ms. Swansman in 2011. She continued to work for Jenny Craig for JCUSA for another 6 years. So there can be no question that there was consideration for the contract, and there's no question that she signed the contract. What the contract also says is it has provisions for what sort of authority the arbitrator will have. So the contract that was signed by the parties, we would submit, is enforceable. What the appellate division did in reaching the decision in the Flansman case was it imposed for the first time a requirement that has never been imposed before on arbitration agreements. And it imposed a requirement that really is not found anywhere in the New Jersey Arbitration Act or in the Federal Arbitration Act. And what the appellate division said is that in order to have a meeting of the minds, not only does an individual need to understand what it is that they are giving up the right to a jury trial, but the individual also has to understand all of the rules that go along with going to arbitration. So what the decision does is it imposes upon arbitration agreements conditions that are not normally required or required in any other agreements. Conditions that require specificity with respect to terms that are really not needed to be addressed in an arbitration agreement, because after all, you can look at the FAA or you can look at the New Jersey Arbitration Agreement, and that will provide the source for any dispute as to what rules apply.
Well, will that tell you, in the FAA or New Jersey Arbitration Agreement, how the arbitration will be conducted, how you pick your arbitrators, what rules will apply to the arbitration, those essential matters? Will looking at those statutes or rules provide that for you?
Certainly, because if you look at the New Jersey Arbitration
Act, would you agree with, like, AAA arbitration is very different from Mediate, and they all have very different rules?
I think they have different rules. I don't know that I agree with all of the discussion that they vary that much. Their fees may be different, and they
I'm
may
not
have
worried about fees.
Procedures.
I'm working on procedurally.
Yeah, they may have different procedures, but I
for example, if you're going to play in a football game and you don't know you only get 4 downs to go 10 yards, you're never going to win the game, no matter how good you are. You need to know the rules.
Yes, and what the New
don't
Jersey
quiz them on those rules. Just don't. Pardon? Don't try quizzing him on those rules.
You'd lose.
Well, isn't the question whether or not the specific rules are integral to the agreement to arbitrate, which is, you know, something that's difficult to find. It's not easily found in the cases that have had to consider whether or not that type of provision is integral to the agreement to arbitrate. Would you agree?
I agree that that's the issue, and I don't think that that provision is integral to the agreement to arbitrate. The key material term here is that the parties agreed to arbitration as the method by which they will resolve their disputes. Now think about this. The reason why you have arbitration is because it's more efficient, mm-hmm. and it's faster, and it's easier. Mm-hmm. And if the parties agree that they're going to go to arbitration, then the parties can get together as to, all right, how are we going to proceed with this arbitration? The New Jersey Arbitration Act provides that if the two parties cannot agree as to who the arbitrator is going to be or what method to be selected, you can go to court and you can have the court appoint an arbitrator. Then the New Jersey Arbitration Act also says that the arbitrator is required to conduct a fair and impartial hearing and come up with the methods for doing that.
Picking up on Justice Lavecchia's question, the case law draws a distinction when there is a choice of forum between whether it's an integral part of the agreement or an ancillary logistical concern. How do we know one from the other? What factors should guide our analysis?
Well, I think where you have the factors to guide your analysis is right in the Federal Arbitration Act and the New Jersey Arbitration Act, which both favor arbitration.
But what factors should we look to in order to decide which category it falls in?
Well,
And you specified, you were pointing to the acts broadly. Can you help us beyond that?
Well, I think if you look at the Federal Arbitration Act, right from the very beginning of the act, it talks about the fact that arbitration is the preferred resolution, that it will be enforced. And then the Federal Arbitration Act provides, if the parties have not been able to reach an agreement, that they're, like the New Jersey Arbitration Act, that an application can be made to the court to have the court appoint an arbitrator. And at that point, the court appoints the arbitrator, and it's no different than if the parties had in their agreement reached an agreement as to who the arbitrator would be.
Don't the circuit courts, when they're making this determination, look to the express language of the agreement to determine whether or not it's integral or essential, to use an analogous word?
Yes, I agree with that. I also think that there's been a lot of discussion in the briefing about various cases where the parties did actually address what the rules or the forum would be,
yes,
and then it wasn't available.
Right.
And so because they addressed the rules of the forum, then that was an essential term of their agreement, so it couldn't be enforced.
Right. So does that then support your position, because here, where we did not have that level of detail requiring a specific forum, one could have turned to the New Jersey statute or the FAA, if necessary, as a means to fill in a non-integral or essential term that was not decided with specificity in the agreement itself?
Yes, Justice, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Should we view the statute as standing for the proposition that the legislature views an arbitration agreement to be binding, potentially binding, even though the arbitrator is not named, it's not AAA, there's no specific set of rules that's given, because the legislature is saying, if you don't agree on that, you still have your arbitration, but we fill in those details?
Yes, Justice, that's exactly what should apply here. And I think that where you look at the cases where the courts have set aside the arbitration agreement, mm-hmm. where the parties actually went and set forth the criteria right. for the rules, well, that was a key component of their agreement, and when it didn't exist anymore, then you didn't have it.
So it might be an integral. The parties may have negotiated heavily over where is this arbitration going to be. It's got to be in the Bahamas or wherever. That may be important to a given set of parties, but do you read the legislature as saying it doesn't mean that there's no meeting of the minds if these details are not set forth in the agreement?
Yes, I do, and I also think that this court has read it the same way in Kernahan. Their statement in the court was, unless superseded by the parties' agreement, the New Jersey Arbitration Act prescribes the rules governing the conduct of the proceeding.
So what do we make? Okay, given what you've just read, mm-hmm. what do we make of this language in the arbitration agreement? Employee will pay the then current Superior Court of California filing fee toward the course of the arbitration, i.e. filing fees, administration fees, and arbitrator fees. I won't read the rest. In light of the so-called default provision, what does that mean?
Well, there are many.
Can you explain that?
Yes, Justice. There are many decisions that provide that an individual that opts for arbitration, or many arbitration agreements that provide when an individual opts for arbitration, that they still have to pay whatever the filing fee would be if they had gone to court. But if you read on in that decision, in that provision, it also says in there that if there's anything in here that a court finds is going to make this unenforceable, then it won't apply.
I understand, but mm-hmm. let's assume that it does. Are you saying that doesn't apply? I'm trying to figure out what that means and what your position is to the language of that line.
What that means is that to institute an arbitration, Ms. Flansman has to pay the current Superior Court of California filing fees.
Is it suggesting that California's arbitration rules, whatever they may be, apply in this case? Because otherwise I'm trying to figure out why would an arbitration agreement just have this stray provision, you've got to pay the California filing fee. Like, why is that there?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, that that's a stray provision. I think that arbitration agreements contain provisions for the payment of some sort of amount by an individual that brings a claim to arbitration.
Why wouldn't it mention the New Jersey? I'm trying to figure out why California is in there. The reason why I'm asking that question, it goes Because the issue here is basically a pure contractual one. And Kernahan basically set out the law. To be enforceable as a contractual undertaking, agreement must be sufficiently definite in its terms that the performance to be rendered by each party can be ascertained with reasonable certainty. So Kernahan says that. That's been the law for the last 100 years or more in New Jersey. So I'm asking that question in light of trying to figure out the definiteness of what's in there. And that's the reason why I'm asking this question. What does that mean? You guys drafted the arbitration agreement, so I would assume you know what it means.
What it means is that the plaintiff, in this case, Ms. Flansman, needs to go to arbitration. She needs to pay whatever amount it would cost to file a claim in California Supreme Court. The company is headquartered in California, and its HR department is in California. And so they use California as the gauge. But they also went on to say that if the employee shall not be required to pay any type or amount of expense, if such requirement would invalidate this agreement or would otherwise be contrary.
So I get that. So I'm trying to figure out what your position is. Is your position that this California provision does apply or doesn't apply?
The California provision to pay the fee that is set forth by the California State Court does apply.
Anything more about California law, or is that the only thing that you're arguing applies?
All I'm arguing for purposes of this petition is that applies.
Can I ask you, have you looked at California law to determine whether or not its statutes provide for a similar application to the court where a specific arbitrator has not been selected or arbitration forum has not been selected? Because I've looked at the California Code of Criminal Procedure, and I found section 1281.6, which is worded very similar to the New Jersey gap-filling provision. As the drafter of this agreement, was that in mind when you referred to the California filing fee?
I can't address what was in mind when the agreement was drafted, but what I can say is that we did argue before the lower court that it didn't matter whether you applied California law or New Jersey law, the result's still the same.
Wouldn't you be hard-pressed to argue beyond what you've just argued, that this specific recitation about the filing fee in California means that and nothing more?
I would be hard-pressed to argue anything more.
There's no choice of law provision in this agreement at all.
I would agree with that, Justice.
Let me ask you something. Do you view the Appellate Division's decision as potentially barring people from selecting anybody other than an arbitrator affiliated with AAA or JAMS or one of these companies that both provide arbitrators and provide a forum?
With all due respect to those organizations, I do view that as a problem. I think that the arbitrator can be anyone selected by the parties, that it doesn't need to be someone that's affiliated with one of these large organizations that administers arbitration agreements. Now, I know in the amicus brief it talked about the fact that, well, who knows who the arbitrator will be? You could have somebody that's not qualified, but remember, in this situation, you're going to be going to, if the parties cannot agree, and if the parties agree, they can agree to whoever they want, but if the parties cannot agree, then you're going to court, and then the judge is going to determine who it is that will be.
It just struck me in reading the Appellate Division that it was suggesting that, for example, a retired judge who was with a law firm or someone who is simply on their own and doesn't carry with them a forum in the sense of a place to hold the arbitration of a set of rules such as AAA has for arbitration may just be out of luck with respect to becoming the arbitrator in this case.
I think there is one way you could read that opinion that way. But then there's a part of the opinion that says that the Appellate Division is not saying that you can't select your own arbitrator instead of the arbitration forum. And to me, that's confusing, because if the reason why you need the arbitration forum is so that everybody knows what the rules are, and that's an integral part, then selecting the arbitrator doesn't tell you what the rules are. That will be determined, you know, after you do that selection.
So you need, it seems to me you need, under the Appellate Division decisions, you need a set of, you need AAA or somebody else who provides a set of rules that to identify that forum in the agreement, or there is no arbitration. anywhere. There can't be a binding arbitration without that kind of information.
That is what the appellate division decision says, and that is why we think that this court should overturn it, because we submit that arbitration is an efficient and expeditious way for parties to resolve disputes, and the appellate division decision imposes obligations on arbitration that are not contained in any court decisions.
And maybe forcing people into a more expensive arbitration.
Exactly.
Because there are a lot of fees involved with getting with those organizations.
That's true. And I might just mention that this court decided the Leodori case, and of course we're constrained to just what is in the opinion. But if you look at that decision, they quote the arbitration language. The arbitration language is quoted by the court. And the court says the language is fine. The issue was whether or not the agreement had been signed. That language does not say you go to the AAA or to JAMS. It just says you go to a neutral third-party arbitrator.
In this case, did the trial judge allow the plaintiff to pick the arbitrator?
That's what the trial judge did.
So in this case, the plaintiff was at liberty to pick AAA, JAMS, or go with the default provisions in our New Jersey Arbitration Act?
Yeah, I guess I misspoke, Your Honor. The trial court judge did not say the plaintiff could pick the arbitrator. The trial court judge said the plaintiff could pick the process.
The process.
Yes.
The form.
Yes. So that would include,
what does that mean?
They could go to JAMS, they could go to AAA, or if there was no way to, if they wanted to, they could go to the court and ask the court to appoint an arbitrator.
So the plaintiff was basically given the opportunity to pick the rules that she thought might be most favorable to her.
That's true.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there anything you'd like to add to your presentation?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Zakuchny.
Thank you. Your Honor, if it may please the court. The arbitration provision in this matter fails the standard of having a clear and unmistakable mutual assent that is necessary to contract formation that involves a statutory waiver of rights or a waiver of statutory rights. It fails that crucial test in two ways. First, the language of the agreement is confusing, self-contradictory, and ambiguous. So much so that the trial court itself was utterly confused by what the provision required. And two, separately, the provision also fails to provide any information whatsoever, any quanta of information regarding an arbitral forum. So there's no information regarding a mechanism or setting of how arbitration would be utilized that's provided at the time of purported contract formation. And there can be the lesson of Adelies, Carnahan, all of these cases is that there can be no knowing, meaningful, and clear and unmistakably expressed mutual assent to arbitrate if you don't know what you are doing, what is going to happen at the time of the contract formation. And here, there's absolutely no information provided regarding what replaces court. Let me talk about the confusing and contradictory language first. The provision says, at the same time, it says that a party will be precluded from going to court and that claims will be resolved in some unspecified way in lieu of court. That's the language that's used. But then states at the same time that an employee must pay, quote, then current Superior Court of California filing fees. So on the one hand, the agreement purports to tell Ms. Flansman that she won't be allowed in court, but then explicitly references specific California Superior Court fees that she has to pay in order to assert her claims in the first place. So that is inherently contradictory and confounding and confusing. And not only would that be confounding to any average layperson. It was, in fact, extremely confounding to the trial court here. So the proof about the confusion engendered by this agreement is in the pudding, so to speak. This provision does not contain any choice of forum provision. It does not contain any choice of law provision. Yet the trial court still somehow found that this language requiring the payment of Superior Court of California fees require California to be the quote-unquote forum of arbitration, right?
So I'm sorry, would you say that again?
The trial court found that this language of requiring the payment of Superior Court of California fees requires California, quote-unquote, to be the forum for the arbitration. So the agreement does not say that, but what the trial court stated, and I'll quote, is that the court says that the arbitral forum is assumed.
Can you just tell us where you're quoting from, please? Are you quoting from the opinion or just?
Yes,
so
yes.
Just tell us the page.
Sure. I put it in quotes, and if Your Honor looks at it at your leisure, it is in there. They say specifically, the trial court says the arbitral forum is assumed to be California. So clearly,
is this, the argument fails as it does not negate the appropriateness of California as the chosen forum at the time of the arbitration agreement was signed. Is that the language you're looking
for? No, no. It actually specifically says that. You have to that.
I see. It's on page 6.
Okay. Of the arbitral forum is assumed to be California.
Assumed to be
close,
California.
Close. Yes. All right. So clearly, if you have to assume a term, its explication is not clear and unmistakable. And in any event, it's confusing as to even how you can determine to California be a forum without referencing its court system.
Let me ask you a very fundamental question.
Sure.
About the appellate division.
Yes.
We hear from the appellate division that the selection of an arbitral forum is an essential term of the contract without which it cannot be enforced. What is an arbitral forum? Is it a state? Is it a building? Is it an organization? Is it a human being? What is it?
It is some minimum quantum of information that needs to be provided regarding either the mechanism or the setting
to me that doesn't make any sense. We're talking about an essential term. It is saying there is no meeting of the minds unless this term is agreed to, this arbitral forum is agreed to.
Unless there's some information provided to the plaintiff, to the employee, that gives her some basic information about what rights will replace court, or
so
what will replace court in any way, shape, or form.
So would an agreement be valid if it said the parties agree that Joe Smith will serve as the arbitrator?
Yes.
And yet, from that, there's no specification of the mechanism, of the setting, of the rules, and yet you have a meeting of the mind without that detail.
Yes, because Joe Smith is a quant of information that at least provides some information to the plaintiff at the time of contract formation as to whether she or he wants to enter into that contract.
But we don't necessarily know what Joe Smith will do, what rules will apply. Joe Smith has broad discretion in conducting that arbitration.
That is absolutely true. And what I would like to correct is that the appellate division never said that the rules or procedures have to be provided in some type of detail. All right?
Don't we have case law that says that the New Jersey Arbitration Act is the default provision, mm-hmm, in both Fauci and in Kernahan, and therefore, wouldn't the parties know that in the absence of setting forth a particular arbitral forum or particular arbitrator, that the parties would have to turn to our statutory provision, the FAA, New Jersey Arbitration Act?
Your Honor, I think the appellate division got it correctly that what the NJA does is that provision doesn't obviate the need for mutual assent and for knowledge of what replaces court at the time of contract formation. What the New Jersey provision does is provide a safeguard if the parties And if the parties have an enforceable agreement to arbitrate, and that's actually explicit in the language of the NJAA.
Well, they've agreed to, look, in, at least in this contract, they've agreed to an arbitrator. And in the, what the New Jersey Arbitration Act says, in the absence of the naming of a particular arbitrator, the court will name an arbitrator, and then the provisions of the New Jersey Arbitration Act will apply. And the New Jersey Arbitration Act has all sorts of provisions for discovery, for the court managing the case. Go ahead.
Yeah, Your Honor, I understand what Your Honor's point. But listen, look at the actual language of the arbitration provision, all right? It says, if the parties to an agreement to arbitrate cannot agree on a specific arbitrator, then the court can step in. So it presupposes that there's an enforceable agreement in the first place.
But your
so
argument is...
I just wanted to follow up on the earlier question, if I could. Suppose you had an agreement that said the parties agree to arbitrate before an arbitrator of their choosing. Would that be sufficient?
Not quite.
Why not?
It would have to say a little bit more than that, all right? So it would have to say that there's a neutral arbitrator, all right? Because, and I think it would have to say that if the parties can't agree, what would happen, what the method would be.
Why wouldn't the statute kick in at that point?
Because the statute only is a safeguarding in terms of if there's already a contract that can be enforced. You don't get around the basic contract law and the basic provisions of New Jersey contract law, particularly the clear and unmistakable standard for a waiver of a statutory right, simply by referencing the law. I mean, simply by the law being out there. You can reference the law, and if you do that in the agreement, that provides information.
But doesn't Section 11 say, provide for the situation if the parties have not agreed on a method? You can make application.
But before that, it says, if the parties to an agreement to arbitration, all right? So what that provision, so that's first presupposes that there's an agreement. Under the basic standards of contract formation. And then what the provision does is if there's mutual assent, if the parties have agreed, or there's an indicia of mutual assent, but then there's some type of impediment to the method of choosing a specific person to act as arbitrator, the court can step in. And one can think of
your argument is circular. You're saying this is a material term as to which there cannot be a meeting of the minds, and it must be in the agreement, or else there is no agreement. And you're saying the gap-filling provision of the statute only applies if there's already an agreement. Because, but there wouldn't be an agreement under your theory unless the name and information was already provided in the agreement.
That's actually not the case, Your Honor. Let me give you an example of an agreement, all right, that where there's an indicia of consent or assent, that still where this provision would still have to come into play. So, for example, if the parties say, we want to arbitrate our claim, and we agree to use a member of the New Jersey Bar that is proficient in New Jersey law, and that person will, apply the AAA rules, all right? That is an agreement. There's an enough indicia of assent, all right, and enough information to provide to the plaintiff, all right, about what they're agreeing to, what replaces court. But there's still no mechanism for choosing the actual person.
So why does this legislature bother to tell us about procedures? Gap-filling procedures, if you're telling us that without information about AAA rules, it's not an agreement.
Well, because you don't need to know all the procedures to have enough information for an indicia of assent. That's not what the appellate division ruled, and that's not what's required. You just need to know some basic information about what's going to replace. Remember, the term arbitration is not self-defining. It has no intrinsic value. So
I don't understand. I'm still waiting for your answer to the Chief Justice's question.
I'm sorry.
Complete your answer, and then I'm going to ask you to go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
That's right. I think I was simply making the point is that you don't require a set of rules or reference to the American Arbitration Association or anything like that. The appellate division properly held that you can name an individual person, and that at least provides some information. The person can say, oh, okay, I know John Smith. I like John Smith. Right? John Smith will be deciding my case. I can then, you know, knowingly agree to waive my right to a jury trial because I know who John Smith, or I can look up John Smith. There's something there. I don't have to decide everything that John Smith, I don't have to know everything that John Smith is going to do in advance.
Where
in terms
is that
of,
in our law that the name of an arbitrator has to be named? I don't see
it doesn't
that.
Have to be, Your Honor. I just...
So I want to go back to the Chief Justice's
sure.
question, because he referred you to B11, the appointment of an arbitrator.
Yes.
Chief Justice read it. I want to read it again because I want to hear what your answer is.
Yes.
It begins, if the parties to an agreement to arbitrate agree on a method. Okay, then it goes, if the parties had not agreed on a method, that's to appoint an arbitrator, the agreed method fails, or an arbitrator appointed fails or is unable to act and a successor has not been appointed, the court, on application of a party to the arbitration proceeding, shall appoint the arbitrator. Why doesn't that apply here?
Well, it doesn't apply because what that does is simply provide an avenue for having a specific person appointed.
No, it doesn't. It says if nobody's been selected, here's what happens.
That's true. If no specific person has
been
chosen.
No, it says but if there's been no selection.
Your Honor, there has to be some type of indication
of
a form.
No, what the statute says.
Because, Your Honor, take my example that I provided.
But that's
right?
Not what the statute says. The plain language. I could ask Justice Albin to read it again, or I can read it again.
Your
it's
Honor,
not what the statute says. And my next question was, how does your putting these requirements on it comply with kindred nursing?
Well, all that kindred nursing says is that an agreement to arbitrate has to be treated equally under the law with respect to any other type of contract.
And you're putting something in arbitration agreements that's not in this New Jersey Arbitration Act. And you want me to read it again? I'll read the clause again.
Your Honor, but if that's the case, then Attlees, all right, would make no sense, right? Because there's nothing in the arbitration agreement that says, in any law that specifically says you have to advise the party that there's a right to a jury trial. That's an issue of contract law as to what is sufficient information for there to be knowing and meaningful mutual assent.
But Attlees is about what are you giving up?
Right.
Attlees is the message of Attlees is the person ought to understand what they're giving up, and what they're giving up is their right to go to court.
But if arbitration is not self-defining, and you know that you're giving up the right to, if you know you're giving up the right to a jury trial, but arbitration itself is not self-defining, what are you agreeing to exactly if there is absolutely no information?
Well, you
provided?
Go to the, look, so the one thing that, this is compliant with Attlees, you agree? It says you have a right to go to court.
It's not compliant with the principles of Attlees.
At least that provision.
Yes.
So we know that in this case, arbitration means you're not going to court. That's what it says. Then the New Jersey Arbitration Act fills in all of the other pieces over here. It talks about how you appoint an arbitrator, and then the role of the arbitrator, the powers of the arbitrator, rules of discovery, so on and so forth. No.
So if I understand that logic, then the essentially you're saying that the statute, all right, stands instead for what's required in a contract or to the information provided at the time of contract formation.
I asked you the question.
Right, but I guess I'm making a point that's not the way that the works. The law presumes, all right, of some assent, all right, some mutual assent, and then I can think of 100 different scenarios.
Well, they agreed to arbitration. Your issue is you want a lot more, and they also agreed that they're not going to court. So we know that.
I
got arbitration. You're not going to court. Now you're saying is what is required are a lot more details. You want to know what the name of the arbitrator, the rules, should they be in the arbitration agreement?
No.
Go ahead.
No. Some type of forum or some type of setting,
so
some part of information.
Give us a little bit more specificity.
Sure.
And flip it around. What's the bare minimum that you believe needs to be included in the agreement with regard to the forum.
Thank you. I think the Sprint case, from my standpoint, the unpublished decision in Sprint from Judge Wigginton in federal court, provides a good example. So there, the provision said that the decision will be decided by one, a neutral arbitrator, all right? That language is not even in this agreement.
What does that mean? What does it mean, a neutral, an unbiased arbitrator,
yes.
An independent arbitrator?
Yes, a neutral third party.
Our law requires that. I can read to you provisions of the New Jersey Arbitration Act that requires a neutral arbitrator.
I understand.
People who aren't neutral, who happen to have an interest in the case, have to be removed.
But the law also requires contract formation to begin with, right? So one of the bases for vacating an arbitration award is that there has been no agreement to arbitrate in the first place, right? And the language about the choosing the method also presupposes that there's an agreement to arbitrate.
Yes, so we have the agreement to arbitrate.
Yes. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What else?
Yes.
Do you believe must be included?
So it says a neutral arbitrator, mm-hmm. All right, in that agreement. It says that the parties will agree, all right, to choose an arbitrator. That gives at least some information. It gives information to the plaintiff that she will have input, right, that she will have a say in who the arbitrator is. Ms. Flansman never had that, right?
Does the contract that indicates that the arbitration will be conducted by, say, AAA?
No, it does not require that. And then at the end...
That wasn't my question, but go ahead. I'll let you finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. Go ahead.
So my point is that it provides at least that information that the plaintiff will have input, all right? And then it says if the parties cannot agree, then the court will choose the arbitrator. All right.
So is the second clause that you've suggested, that the agreement must say the parties will agree to choose an arbitrator, at odds with Section 11?
No, Your Honor, all I'm saying is that there's many ways that assent, all right, that can be provided.
But I just want to put this in stark terms because
yes.
I'm struggling to
yes.
understand your middle point.
Sure.
You say the agreement has to specify that they will agree to choose an arbitrator, but the statute says, here's what happens if the parties have not agreed on a method for appointing an arbitrator.
In reading the contract there, at least the plaintiff knows that there'll be a neutral third party. At least she knows that she will have input, all right? And at least knows that her rights, to some extent, all right, will be safeguarded by a court in choosing an arbitrator. And she knows all of that at the time of contract formation. That's the point, all right? That's the point. She's given information that she needs to decide whether she's giving up, all right? Look at it from the standpoint of an employee, all right? Do I give up the right to a jury trial? Do I do that or not? What am I getting? All right, it says that I don't get the right to go to court, but what happens instead? All right.
So she has to be informed of what protections the NJAA or the FAA provide her?
That's one way of doing it. If you say something like we will choose John Smith as our arbitrator,
that's another way of doing it. Employment arbitration would seem to me to be a problem to pick a person. The person may be a long-term employee, as this individual turned out to be. You pick a John Smith and God bless John Smith, he may be in Florida or someplace else by the time there's an arbitration needed. So to say that a name is either essential or close to essential is really...
Your Honor, I'm not saying
really
that.
Not practical.
All I'm saying is that there has to be some information provided. I'm not saying any of those things, to be honest. I'm not saying that a specific person needs to be chosen. I'm not saying that there needs to be a specific reference, all right, to the court rules. What I'm saying is that you can do something in providing some information, and this agreement here provides no information.
So going back to the decision we're reviewing is the decision of the appellate division. It says there must be an arbitral forum, and without that, there a material term is missing.
But it defines arbitral forum. It defines it as a mechanism or setting for how the arbitration will be utilized.
Right.
And it gives examples of what that could be.
Right.
It says it could be choosing a specific person. It says it can be choosing an actual arbitration association, all right? All of that provides information. But you can do it other ways, too. You can say, you know what, we're going to choose somebody, like in my example, and I'll just reiterate it, somebody from New Jersey that knows employment law, and that's who will be chosen. Now, that at least tells the person at the time of contract formation, all right, I'm giving up my right to sue here. What am I getting? What will take its place? Who will be? What will be deciding my claim? What will happen? How will this arbitration be enforced? Well, at the very least, all right, I know that it will be decided by somebody from New Jersey, all right, and that's just an example, all right, that knows employment law. Or at the very least, I know it will be decided by this person. Or at the very least, I know it might be decided by one of these four people. An agreement might say this will be decided, the arbitrator will be either John Doe, Jane Roe, John Smith, or John Stanley, whatever.
Do you really, is it good policy for employees to have a requirement that the employer name four arbitrators or one arbitrator, as opposed to the process that would work in default, where the court, without anybody getting a monopoly on those names, is going to ultimately make that determination? Is that really good? You really want employers to be required to say the following three people are going to be your arbitrators. I suspect the employer is going to be familiar with all those people.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, look, I mean, one of the basis for vacating an award, again, all right, is bias of an arbitrator, right? So I don't think employers can just simply choose somebody with bias because they know.
I'm not saying bias, but is that really good policy to say that they're required to pick the arbitrator and put the name in the contract?
I think it's a better policy than simply having a situation here where the employee is given absolutely no information at all right, as to what is going to happen, which actually acts as a deterrent, all right, to parties asserting their claims.
We see many arbitration agreements, and following up on Justice Patterson's question, it's rare to see a name. Many of these agreements say that the arbitration proceedings will be conducted according to the rules of the AAA,
yes,
or JAMS or something like,
yes,
that. But it's really a rarity, if maybe non-existent, when an actual name is placed
but
in a consumer or an employment arbitration.
And I think best practices would most definitely be to choose a well-established arbitral forum that has rules with respect to employment litigations, like the AAA. But
are you saying that if this arbitration agreement referenced the New Jersey Arbitration Act as the, I'll just use this term, arbitral forum, there would be no issue here?
Yeah. If it said that if the parties cannot agree to an arbitrator, then the arbitrator would be chosen by a court, I think that would at least meet that quantum of information.
And if the rules of the New Jersey Arbitration Act, as they are, would be the applicable,
yes,
procedures?
Yes, then even more so, absolutely, right? Because then the person, when they're signing on the contract, and that's the point here, at the time that they're signing, what do they know? What information are they being given, all right? And here, take a look at it from Ms. Flan's, from anybody's standpoint, faced with what the agreement that we have. The agreement doesn't say that she's entitled to an unbiased, neutral third party, all right? It doesn't provide that information. Can
you really think that has to be put in an arbitration agreement?
I think that information. Do I think it has to be?
That's barred by law. You can't have a biased or prejudiced arbitrator. We know that.
The agreement.
That's going to be one of the central terms you want in an arbitration agreement?
Your Honor, I think it's a good idea to have that kind of information to somebody.
But
right?
let me ask the question from the reverse. Do,
yes,
you think with all of this detail that you are arguing is essential to have a meeting of the minds would pass muster with the instruction we're getting from the United States Supreme Court in Kindred Nursing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sounds like you're putting additional hurdles to have an enforceable arbitration agreement beyond what the court would prefer.
Your Honor, I guess a few things. One, I'm not asking for any specific details. All I'm asking for is some quanta information that could, so the person can make a knowing choice. And all that is applying the clear and unmistakable standard that Adelise sets forth. And
we did not address in Kernahan Kindred Nursing's impact on Adelise. The parties withdrew that argument. Are you asking us to address it here?
I don't think it's necessary to address it because there's nothing, because I think there's nothing, there's nothing in Kindred Spirits that's inconsistent with Adelise.
This case is rises or falls on contract formation,
yes.
Period.
Yes.
Even Kernahan and every single Concepcion, every one of those cases says that contract law applies.
Yes.
So you either have a contract here or there isn't a contract here. It's as simple as that.
And either
the essential terms are present or they're not present.
And if you are,
the question is, what is essential? And you're making quite a detailed list of items that you think are essential for arbitration to be agreed to between two parties.
I don't think I am making a detailed list, Your Honor, respectfully. On the contrary, I'm saying that this can be met fairly straightforward, without requiring a detailed list of specification of rules or procedures, just something that tells the plaintiff as to either the mechanism or setting for how their matter would be decided, or some method for how it could be decided. All right, at least do that much. If you don't name an arbitrator, and the appellate division said this, at least describe how an arbitrator might be chosen. All right. So, going back to your point, Justice Albin. So, this is the law from Kernahan that there must be a meeting of the minds as to how the contract will be performed or enforced. All right, that's Kernahan. Because arbitration involves a waiver of statutory rights, take particular care in assuring the knowing assent to arbitration and clear mutual understanding of the ramifications of that assent. How can you knowingly waive your right to a jury trial if you are given absolutely zero information, right? And that's my point, that whatever threshold the court determines is appropriate, that threshold was not met here.
It sounds to me your bottom line is that when arbitration is mentioned, along with it has to be some reference to the rules that will apply. AAA, JAMS, the New Jersey Arbitration Act, or some other set of rules. Is that your argument?
Set of rules or the identity of an arbitrator, or even how the identity of an arbitrator might be arrived at.
How does the identity of an arbitrator that the plaintiff wouldn't even know, someone from just some name, how would that assist your client in knowing the rules of the game?
Well, I mean, because at the, well, pardon me, a little dry. Because at the very least, if we're talking about contract formation, if simply an arbitrator is named,
would you agree you get even less information if all you have is the person's name than if you were to have specification of JAMS rules?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely, Your Honor.
And yet that would suffice.
Absolutely. All I'm saying is, at least for purposes of contract formation, the party can go at least and say, all right, before I sign this, let me take a look at who John Smith is. What is John Smith's background? Right? So,
they tell you absolutely nothing about how John Smith would conduct an
arbitration. Then the party might say, well, I don't know who that is, and I'm not agreeing to that because that provides me no information whatsoever, right? So that's the whole process of the negotiation of the contract.
I think we understand your position. Is there anything else you'd like to add before closing?
Yes, Your Honor. Just one other argument.
Please.
The New Jersey AA and its application, right? I just want to point out that by its terms, that requires an application by a party to the court to request that an arbitrator be appointed, right? So here, all right, Jenny Craig never made that argument never raised that provision at the trial court level whatsoever, and never raised it again before the appellate division. Right? That whole issue was raised sua sponte by the appellate court. So it's actually, it's never been actually raised at all. All right, it was waived, all right, by Jenny Craig here. And not only that, they explicitly, essentially disclaimed application of that provision by arguing that my client has to go and arbitrate in California. So their whole argument was that New Jersey law does not even apply. So, and that was their argument, again, to the trial court and the appellate division. So even if your honors believe that somehow you can bootstrap assent by contractual, by statutory provisions, that's not something that was ever raised and has been waived. All right?
I'm sorry, is it that was waived exactly? What argument?
The argument that the New Jersey law provides a method for appointing an arbitrator. That was waived. That was never argued before the trial court, never argued before the appellate division, and Jenny Craig essentially implicitly disclaimed that by arguing that we need to go and file in California.
Wasn't that a response to your argument that without this information you say is essential, it was unenforceable? That argument seems to have been made to the appellate division.
No, it was not made to the appellate division, Your Honor. That was not raised to the appellate division.
Are you asking us to decide this case without reference to Section 11?
I'm saying that you don't need to decide it. I'm saying that with respect to Ms. Flansman herself, that provision has in fact been waived. That has been waived. Yes.
Understood. Right. Okay. Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wright.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, William Wright for Jersey Association for Justice. I'd like to, if I may, first address a comment that Justice Albin made about the New Jersey Arbitration Act being the default rules in accordance with Kernahan, if I may. The way I understand Kernahan's reading of that statute as the default rules of procedure in arbitration is that Kernahan says, this court said, the statute is the default rules if the agreement doesn't supersede the act. I submit that this agreement, in a very narrow sense, I'm not talking about the broad sweeping issues that counsel was talking about before, but in a very narrow sense, this agreement, by its application of at least one provision of California law, i.e., the California filing fees, arguably supersedes the New Jersey Arbitration Act, and therefore the default rules.
Mr. Wright, the provision with respect to California is not a choice of law provision. No one has ever argued that it's a choice of law provision.
It's not, and
it's
I don't.
It's not, and so it has reference to fees, and it may have been. They wanted to use a familiar number. I have no idea why they put that reference to a number. They could have put $200 in there or $500 or whatever they wanted to put in. But no one, as I understand it, in this case has ever argued that this agreement is subject to the substantive law of California.
And that's why I said this agreement, in a very narrow sense, supersedes the New Jersey Arbitration Act in a limited way.
I'm looking at the trial court opinion. I'll just read it. Have you read the trial court opinion?
In this case?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to read a part, and maybe you can tell me what this means. And it was referenced by counsel, as such, it can be deduced that California law will control the arbitration while the arbitral forum is assumed to be California. It's well settled that a party being required to arbitrate in a foreign state is acceptable, not unconscionable. What does that mean?
That means that the trial court believed the NJAA was superseded by this provision in the agreement. And if that's the case, the agreement as it's written is silent as to any rules of procedure.
But the trial court extensively relied on the NJAA. The trial court, in looking for a statement of policy, went right to the NJAA, and it's a substantive part of its determination.
And as I said, obviously the provision that says California filing fees apply doesn't make an all-encompassing statement about choice of law.
But it doesn't say file in California, and it doesn't say choice of law in California. All it does is give you a number. Whatever the filing fee is becomes the fee that the plaintiff has to pony up, that's a legal term, for in order to proceed. I don't read into that it means that everything has to go to California.
I don't think it does, but...
Let me read this to you. I'm sorry.
Sure.
And you can, in response, I'm just looking at the trial court opinion. Defendant has indicated that they are flexible on permitting the arbitration proceeding to take place closer to New Jersey as long as California law is applied to the proceeding.
And that goes to the argument that the employer made about what law applies. That also goes to the general confusion on the part of everyone, the trial judge, the employer, and the employee, of where we go, what the rules are. Is it 4 downs and 10 yards? Is it 5 downs and 15 yards? Who do I pay the California filing fee to, for example? There's no answer to that question from the terms of the agreement. There's no answer to that question in the NJAA. So as a plaintiff, as an employee, as a person on either side of the contract reading the agreement, do I know what rules apply? Do I know whether the NJAA has been superseded as the default rules? I'm sure if I'm the employee, I don't know that the NJAA is even the default rules. But certainly if I'm told that some California rule applies, I might think, well, gee, do other California rules apply? Is it 4 downs and 10 yards? Is it 5 downs and 15 yards?
I don't think that the trial court was very certain, because that's the reason why it turned over the choice to the plaintiff. This is the last part I'll read from the agreement, and I'll stop. It should be noted that during oral argument on December 15, 2017, the court proposed that the absence of an arbitral body being named in the arbitration agreement would not render the entire agreement unenforceable. However, in the interest of fairness, the choice of which arbitral body would conduct the arbitration would be turned over to the plaintiff.
And that is the trial court essentially rewriting the party's agreement, because that wasn't part of the agreement.
So let me make a suggestion. Since we're here reviewing a thoughtful opinion of the appellate division,
sure.
And in the waning minutes that you have at this hour of the day, tell us what you find laudable or not about the opinion and where we should go.
I find the opinion laudable, and I think that a statement of what rules apply, however that statement is made, no talismanic words, no specific recitation, but there needs to be something, just like this court said in Attlees, to let the person know what they're getting. There needs to be mutual assent, and without an understanding in its simplest terms what rules apply, the employee, the employer, the trial court may not know.
So in concrete terms, what needs to be in the agreement?
Anything. I made this argument in 2014 in Attlees when I stood here and I said it could say not court, it could say waive a jury. In this case, it could say the AAA rules apply. It could say the New Jersey Arbitration Act applies. It could say the JAMS rule applies. Something for the signer to refer to know what they're getting, especially in a case like this where the agreement provides a sliver of rules from one jurisdiction, but the remainder of the rules, according to some of the arguments made today, are under the NJAA.
It's a statute. I'm sorry, Chief. Go ahead, please. Were you going to continue? NJAA is a statute. Are we now requiring that statutes be summarized in contracts, applicable statutes be summarized in contracts, and if they're not, the contract is not binding? Because let's think about what you just said. You can say AAA, but the default is the NJAA. It applies if there's not a selection of the individual or the rules. So what are you saying about what contracts New Jersey, arbitration contracts, bearing in mind the federal law, that when we're dealing with an arbitration contract, you got to do something really special, and that is summarize statutes for purposes of everybody knowing what's there?
I've certainly not argued that the statute should be summarized. I'm only arguing that a person be given the opportunity to mutually assent to something by being informed of the rules, whether those rules are the statute, the AAA, JAMS, or some other organization.
Well, if it's statute, you're saying that the statute has to be presented in the arbitration agreement. And I just want to say two words about that, kindred nursing.
In this,
and tell me why the United States Supreme Court might not be unhappy about that.
In this narrow context, with reference to these specific facts, where the agreement references one state's rules, I think yes. If the intention is for the NJAA to apply as the default rule, while this particular provision references another state rules, that's very important that the signers understand that. In a case where there's no mention of California law, for example, if it is an otherwise at least compliant provision,
there's no mention of California law in this case, only a fee schedule. There's nothing that says, and anywhere in this country, say California law applies, California law is of control, how you pick arbitrators, it just sets a fee schedule, just like when you in the rules of court, when you're serving someone and it says by fee schedule. That's all it does. It doesn't talk about California law applying in any way.
And I'll let you try to wrap up your argument as you respond, please.
And that's all I have. I think I've summed it up. I think I've answered questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dwyer.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Ravner, and may it please the court. If I may, I'd like to hit on three points in light of the colloquy that I've heard. And most particularly the issue that Chief Justice Ravner and other members of the court have raised, which is how do we decide whether something is integral versus ancillary? Because what I think both sides in this case agree on, based on statements made in Ms. Margiello's brief, is that this is a question of contract law. And like any contract, there has to be mutual assent. And as the defendants themselves agree in their brief, in the context of a waiver of a statutory right, mutual assent means that that waiver must be clear, unmistakable. The parties have to understand what they're doing. And so what has to be in this agreement in order to do that? I would take direction from this court's decision in Fawzi versus Fawzi. As the court knows, that was a case where this court held that parties in a matrimonial matter or family law matter could, if they wanted to, submit child custody and visitation issues to an arbitrator. And in fact, in that case, the parties agreed to do that with the advice of counsel on the record, and the judge even on the record explained to them what was going on. But this court held that the problem was is that arbitration is unique in that the method of review is very different. The review that's available of an arbitral award is extraordinarily narrow, unlike what would normally be the case in a court decision. And so because of that unique quality of arbitration, the court said for the waiver to be effective, the parties have to be advised of that specially narrow review. So in figuring out what's integral and what's ancillary, you have to look at what makes arbitration different than
but
other
that
procedures.
That case was dealing with the court's parens patriae responsibility over the best interests of children that were involved in that divorce proceeding, as I recall.
Yes.
There was a twist to what we were saying that you're quoting back to us now.
Yes, that is what the debate in that case was about, but this court came down firmly on saying that despite that, the issue of custody and visitation could be submitted to arbitration, and the only difference is that unlike the normal arbitration review standard, in the case of custody and visitation, you would have a slightly more searching standard that if a party could show that the custody or visitation decision was harmful to the child, then that would be a basis for challenging the arbitral award, which would normally not be the case under the NJAA. So all my point, Justice Zabecki, is that the court said that has to be explained to the parties, because that's what part of what makes arbitration very different is the standard of review. Another thing that makes arbitration very different is that there are no rules. And respectfully, the references to the NJAA here, as we tried to lay out in our brief, the NJAA doesn't specify anything. There's no requirement for discovery under the NJAA. It's completely up to the arbitrator. There's no requirement of holding a hearing. There's no requirement of taking testimony from witnesses. There's no required training for the arbitrator. There's no requirement for the arbitrator to follow the law. None of that. And that makes arbitration very different. And so what is integral, I submit, in an arbitration agreement for the parties to understand what they are doing, for there to be mutual assent, and therefore a clear and unmistakable waiver of their rights to proceed in court, is the arbitration agreement needs to, in some fashion, explain to the parties either that there are no rules, that it's the Wild West, or to tell them what the rules are going to be. And in this case, we have an agreement that does not say what the location of the arbitration is going to be. It does not say what law will apply to any dispute between the parties. It does not say what processes will be used if the arbitration is held. And it does not say anything about how an arbitrator will be selected. And in addition to that, to mess things up more, it has this bizarre reference to California. And Ms. Margiello is, quite frankly, being very modest today, and she comes and says, oh, all that means is the filing fee, because that's not what she said in the trial court, and it's not what she said in the appellate division. You have the appellate division briefs. She said in the trial court and the appellate division that means that the venue is California. You have to bring this arbitration in California. The trial judge said not only do you have to bring the case in California, but California law applies. And Justice Fernandez-Vina, I agree with you. That's not how I would read the agreement, but Judge O'Dwyer read it that way, no relation. And
But then the judge permitted the plaintiff to select.
So let me get to that's kind of my third point, but I'm happy to jump there, Justice Albright. So that's the point under Delta Funding versus Harris. So the court remembered that in that case, the Third Circuit certified questions to the Supreme Court about whether or not particular provisions in an arbitration agreement, a consumer contract, were unconscionable. Right. And the court said, well, you know, it's hard to say with definiteness because we'd have to look at how the arbitrator will interpret these provisions. But if the arbitrator interprets it such and such way, yeah, it would be unconscionable. And one of those related to fees. And the arbitral decision set basically left it up to, you know, whether there would be a loser pays thing or how the arbitrator might split the fees. And this court said, no, if that's how it's interpreted, that would violate the Consumer Fraud Act, which clearly has a fee-shifting provision that says that if the consumer prevails, they will be awarded fees. So if that's how it's decided, then that is unconscionable.
So you want us to write an opinion that says that in order for a parties to have a meeting of the minds, the location, I guess it's and or, the there must be a forum selection clause, there must be or a location of physically where the arbitration is going to be, the processes have to be described, and how will the arbitrator be selected? I think you're differing from perhaps from your co-counsels. You're not suggesting names be thrown out there.
No.
I didn't think
but
so.
I'm not suggesting what you just said either, Justice Patrick.
I'm sorry?
I'm not suggesting what
no,
you just
but
said
but you're
either.
Saying one of those or some combination of those must be in the arbitration agreement.
No, I'm
not
saying that. What I'm saying is that if none of that is specified, that has to be said in the arbitration agreement. So, for example, in the Sprint case that Ms. Margiello cites to the court, if you go look at the Sprint case, it lays out a procedure for how the arbitrator is going to be selected. And then it says the arbitrator will decide the rules for how the arbitration proceeds. So when the consumer signed that contract with Sprint, and by the way, that agreement also specified what state law would apply, what the forum would be, the venue, I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the word forum.
Well, the arbitrator's not going to decide how the arbitrator's going to be picked.
No, the arbitrator would decide the rules for how the arbitration
okay.
would proceed.
So you're
so
saying
a consumer
that, you're
who signs that knows what they're getting.
You're saying if these things are not in there, the contract has to say these things are not in here.
The contract here doesn't
or it's
say
not,
anything.
Or it's not a meeting of the mind.
It doesn't say anything, and the one thing that
no,
it does say is misleading
it,
because it says this thing about California.
You're saying that these factors must be either in the agreement or the contract has to say we're not specifying.
There are no rules governing the arbitration procedure. There's no rules governing how the arbitrator will be selected. There's no rules governing where the arbitration
if
can
it
be brought.
Merely ref-
no
if it merely referenced the New Jersey Arbitration Act, would that be sufficient? If it said the New Jersey Arbitration Act will govern, if that was, would that be sufficient?
Yes. Okay. Because the person signing that contract
and it still
could
would,
go
it,
read the New Jersey Arbitration
and,
Act.
And once the plaintiff read it, the plaintiff would realize, I still don't know what I'm going to be getting.
No, they realize they're signing up for the Wild West,
right.
And that's what they're getting. And if they want to do that, that's okay. But they have to understand it. Just like in FASI, if the parties want to sign up for a situation where the arbitrator can make a decision about custody or visitation and they're stuck with it, even if the law isn't followed, okay, that's what they signed up for. If I could just finish the Delta funding point. The court was presented with the fact that Delta Funding said, oh, don't worry about these fee provisions. We'll pay Ms. Harris's fees, okay? We'll pay all of her fees. And this court, I think quite correctly, following the Sixth Circuit, said, no, that is not an answer, because we have to look at the agreement as written. And as written, the agreement leaves fees completely up in the air. And that will have the effect of deterring people from bringing claims. And that's what makes the provision unconscionable. And the fact that after somebody has been battling it out in court, the defendant says, oh, okay, we'll waive the fees, we'll pay everything, doesn't change the fact that the provision is unconscionable. And quite frankly, we have the same situation here. If I had a client, and remember, the situation here was when Ms. Flansman came to find a lawyer, she didn't remember that she had signed this thing, the lawyer didn't know the thing existed. If I had a client come to me with this agreement, I'd have to say, well, I don't know where the arbitration would occur. I don't know what law would apply to it. I don't know what processes would follow. I don't know how the arbitrator would be selected. No, I'm not taking this case. No one would take this case. And that's the whole point. It's not a defect, it's a design. It's designed to deter people from bringing claims. And it works. There are more people covered by these pre-dispute arbitration clauses in the private sector than there are people who are members of unions. And yet, when we look at what happens in arbitrations, they're almost all contract claims. People don't file statutory claims in arbitration. They file them in court because the arbitration is so stacked against the party that they would never want to proceed with it. So the fact that somebody later on comes along, Justice Albin, and says, oh, you know what? Sorry, we didn't specify anything in this. You can decide the rules. You can pick the arbitral form. You can pick the venue. That doesn't change the fact that, as written, the agreement is unconscionable.
Thank you, Mr. Dwyer.
Thank you.
Ms. Margiela, brief rebuttal.
There's a lot of things that I would like to address, but there's two that I think need to be addressed. First of all, there was no waiver of the application to the court to have an arbitrator appointed. What happened here was the arbitration agreement was sent to counsel. There was no agreement, no, we're not going to arbitrate. So there was no disagreement as to appointing an arbitrator. There's just a refusal whatsoever at all to go to arbitration. So you couldn't very well go to a court and say, hey, the parties have agreed to go to arbitration, but we're having trouble figuring out who we should use, so can the court help us and appoint the arbitrator? So it wouldn't be applicable in this situation. And then the other thing that I want to comment on is the last comments really are reflective of a view that the U.S. Supreme Court and this court have rejected, and that is that arbitration is stacked against the parties. Our public policy favors arbitration. It gets people to resolve disputes on a much cheaper, quicker way than the court system does. That's the reality. And so to say that, oh, you have to find some more requirements in arbitration agreements because it's all stacked against
not
the
more,
individual.
Just try to figure out, like, what are the rules? Like, you argued in the trial court and that California law applied.
Well,
Unless the trial court was mistaken about your argument, because I just read that into the record.
No, Your Honor. But what I would say to that is this court now is just faced with a de novo review of what's the law here. What is it that we should be doing? So whatever parties argued in the trial court or what the trial court decided or what the appellate division decided, it's now up to this court to say, let me look at this agreement and really, do we need to have rules? There's two issues between you. Do we need to have rules and a method for selecting the arbitrator in an agreement in order for it to be enforced?
Shouldn't the plaintiff know in advance what the rules are, whether it's California, whether it's New Jersey, whether it's JAMS, whether it's AAA? Shouldn't that be in a contract? Is that not a significant term? No?
No.
If we were to require choice of law provisions as a material term of arbitration contracts, mm-hmm. and we didn't require them to be material terms of all other contracts under New Jersey law, would we have a little bit of a problem with 9 people in Washington, or at least 5 of them?
I would think so.
The FAA and treating arbitrations differently, imposing rules that are different?
Yes, I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation about this case, let's face it. There were so many articles that were written about it, and one of the comments that I saw was, you know, you have an agreement, and the agreement says you're going to get paid $10,000. Well, if the agreement doesn't say you're going to get paid by wire transfer, you're going to get paid in cash, you're going to get paid by check, then that agreement isn't enforceable.
As a matter of law, a choice of law provisions have never been found in New Jersey to be part of our contract in material terms. Am I right about that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. We're going to take a brief recess and come back for the disciplinary matter in a few moments.